Hello and welcome to the Homegrown Sunshine podcast, the place where we gather to discuss the art, the practice, the highs and the lows of cultivating a wholesome and culturally diverse home education culture for you and your entire family. My name is Kainana Wunarena and I am a proud homeschooler. It's my absolute pleasure to welcome and introduce you to our host, my amazing mum, Alberta Stevens.
Hello, lovely ones. Welcome to episode 12 of season 1 of the Homegrown Sunshine podcast, where we have been exploring the diverse rituals and practices within home education life. Firstly, Happy New Year! I wish you all the very best for 2022. I hope that your year has started off on a beautiful front and that you've had time for rest and play and family and fun. And I thought this would be a brilliant time, as we're all around family and relaxed, to bring you the final episode in our series of rituals and practices within home education. But before that, I thought this would be a good time to just round up for those of you who may be joining me for the first time, or maybe you've just heard recent episodes, just give you a quick roundup of the journey so far. So we started off earlier in the year with a general discussion around daily rituals and topic studies with Claire Carberry, who lives in London. And the following episode, Claire also gave us a glimpse of what Lenten practices around Easter is like in her home as part of her Catholic tradition. Later on, we went to the States to meet Amber Johnston from Heritage Mum blog, who took us on a journey down the American South as she shared her enchanting summer school practices and what that would look like as she adventured into the Deep South earlier this year. Next, we had Afia Bayeyi from Team Bayeyi, who shared with us her eclectic music rituals and passion for music in her home, which she draws largely from her family's multicultural roots. Followed by this was Veronica from Multicultural Motherhood, who took us outdoors as she taught us loads of tips and ideas of how to do school outdoors. We then went highbrow with Rebecca Jammet to whet our appetite for introducing art into our homes. The next episode was by Molly Ashton, who took us into the countryside and showed us what homeschooling is like in the countryside, especially with children with additional needs. And later in the summer, I interviewed Min Huang from New York, who reminded us of why it's necessary to nurture our own souls as mothers and parents. Whilst Erica Alicia from New York taught us why it's important to have our eyes and ears out for birds, even if we live in urban cities. And our previous episode, we heard from Jack Stewart, who spoke eloquently about how to include the Word of God and how to create a theological framework within our morning time liturgy for our children. Finally, today we will be hearing from my dear friend and sister on this journey, Liz Yeboah, on how she cultivates the love of learning through living books and morning time within her beautiful family who are based in Milton Keynes. So there you go. We have had quite a journey. Let me tell you a little bit about Liz, and I will introduce her again when we come to speak, but just briefly so you know what you're in for. Liz Yeboah is a full-time homemaker and home educator. Liz spends her days enchanting her five children, yes, you heard me, five children, whose ages span from 23 to 8, to love learning through her passion for living books, her heart for travel and adventure, and also her dedication to supporting her, a life-giving family rituals in her home. And she does this alongside her husband, James, who leads on the teaching of business and life skills, as well as character and spiritual formation to their children. The Yeboahs are an amazing family, and I've met them personally. So I'm not just saying this, but I have also experienced their hospitality. What makes Liz's story in particular such an inspiring one, apart from the fact that they run a wonderful tag team, I really mean this, is her unique perspective on motherhood. For Liz, motherhood is a God-given gift for us mothers or parents to minister to the heart and formation of the most important of God's creation, that is, souls. When Liz and I got together for the first time, we were like long lost friends, really. I mean, the synergy, the camaraderie, the laughter, the oh my goodness, you two moments were just extraordinary. We probably went about an hour into the podcast before we actually started the podcast, and that's just how exciting it was. Don't worry, we did save some juicy bits for you too, so that's to come. But really, she is fascinating. So in the show, be prepared to encounter a beautiful picture of what a Black marriage, Christian marriage in motion looks like. Home edders will be enthralled by the list of amazing books that the Yeboahs say that their children cannot live home without. I must say that Liz is one of the people that I look to on Instagram for really interesting book finds. She always has a good book to share about. So keep an ear out for a treasure trove of books for the home ed mama's heart as well. This episode is heartwarming, it's thought provoking, it's inspiring. And just heart melting, really. And it is just the right combination of push and pull that I think we all need at this reflective time of year. So sit tight, enjoy, and please don't forget to get back to me to let me know your thoughts on this episode as well as others. Now for a quick reflection by Boaz, one of Liz's sons.
Clouds by Christina Rossetti. White sheep, on a blue hill. When the wind stops, you all stand still. When the wind blows, you walk away slow. White sheep, where did you go?
Hello and welcome back. It's my absolute pleasure to introduce you to my dear friend, Liz Yeboah. Liz is an amazing home educator, British and Ghanaian, living in Milton Keynes with her husband, James, and their five children. Liz is previously a nursery school teacher and ministry worker before becoming a full-time homesteader and home educator. She is passionate about books, about travel, and mentoring and coaching young couples. She and her husband met as teenagers and have been playing a wonderful tag team since.
As far as I can see, through watching Liz over the last year and also speaking with her, is that her family and the way she works out her home ed life is motherhood. Is a ministry to Liz. And I also understand that there are other ministries that she and her husband do in terms of supporting young people through difficulties in their lives. But mostly so in the way that she cultivates her home life, the way she serves her children, the way she makes loving and giving to her children her life's work, has been a beautiful ministry for us to watch unfurl on Instagram. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Liz Yeboah to tell us about, to learn about how she cultivates the love of morning time, the love of reading and poetry in her homeschool, because these are things that I have seen and how we can learn more from her. Welcome, Liz.
Oh, thank you so much, Alberta. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're so welcome. I've waited weeks and months to have you on here.
Likewise. And thankfully, we've been able to just make this happen. So I'm really thankful for that.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I see from following you that you've been on a wonderful, beautiful holiday in Shropshire. I have a friend who has a home in Shropshire and has told me a lot about it, but never really seen it, you know, what it looks like. And in the last few days, I feel like I've been to Shropshire alongside you. It was just a beautiful photo. So thank you for sharing your many adventures with us online.
Yes, I love adventures. I mean, they keep you alive. They make my heart sing. And Shropshire was absolutely beautiful and much needed after all the lockdown business going on. So we're just grateful
for
what we could get at the moment.
Wonderful. And you've done a lot of traveling. I've seen photos of you in various parts of Europe, Asia, and things like that. So that has been part and parcel of your home ed trajectory, right? You do a lot of traveling with your kids.
Yes, a lot. That's something we spoke about at the very beginning, that, you know, world schooling would play a part and a role in some capacity within our homeschool. And we had some values laid down for that and the reasons why. And we just didn't want the children to be limited by any forms of mindsets. We wanted them to feel and know that the world in our day is quite small, and that they could get to wherever they need to get to and experience all that they needed to from other cultures, because our way is the only way. They can learn from people. And I think it's just a good way to learn. It's another layer of education, traveling.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I'm not sure where I've read this before, but it's something that I certainly subscribe to, that travel is just one of those things that exposes a child's mindset, that takes them away from, you know, their community or locality a little bit, to see that the world is much bigger than the issues that are presented maybe just in school, or maybe, you know, church life, or, you know, local life. You know,
it causes a lot of inspiration, and for them to think out of the box, because even as adults, when you travel, it influences you in so many different ways. So just thankful we're just able to do that.
And you're able to tie that to your learning as well.
Oh, that's the fun bit. Absolutely. Absolutely. On so many different levels, we use traveling to enhance our learning, current projects we're doing, journaling, things we read about, places we read about, poets we read about, authors we read about. We go on, places that influence their writing. So yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
Oh, so amazing. So amazing. Wow. Well, Liz, so I know a little bit more about you than my listeners. Tell us a little bit about how you started and why did you start? What's the journey been like?
Wow, that's a long story, but I'll give you the short version. So our oldest is, in fact, 23 years old next.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
23.
Right, I've got a man for a start. Man child. And I've got a second man child. He is 19. And then a 15-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 7-year-old. I had heard of homeschooling, but I hadn't looked into it. And we went to a conference with a speaker that we look up to. And it's just such a blessing. But unfortunately, his second He was in England and he did two conferences. The first one was fine. The second one, we didn't actually, you know, read the flyer. It was actually a homeschooling conference. So we just turned up and it was a homeschooling conference. And all of these homeschoolers were there with all their wonderful families. Wow. And we sat down, but we were just thankful anyway, because we knew we were going to just hear things we needed to hear to encourage our faith and encourage ourselves, because we're Christian. So there we sat listening to the speaker. And by the end of the 2 hours, the first part of the day, I know my husband, he turned around. I just knew it. Upon hearing all that we heard, I knew he was going to just turn around and say, you know, we're homeschooling. And he literally did. He turned around to me, mouthed, you know, we're homeschooling, right? And I said, yeah, I know. And that was it. We were homeschooling on the drive home. We were like,
had you had children by then?
What did you say?
Had you had children by then?
Oh, yeah. So this happened 2015. So this was almost 2015, 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we had children. So our oldest has graduated. He's got a degree in political science and international relations. So it was the last four that we homeschooled.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the second man child, he did his GCSEs from home.
Okay.
And so, because that was the beginning of our journey. And right. So speaking of, and they were in quote unquote very good schools. They loved school. Oh my gosh. Like, you know, they love school. And their school was like something out of Alice in Wonderland or something. It was very unusual school. It was just, I think if you were going to get anything best, like close to a bit of homeschool, I'll say it was a bit, they'll have like hot chocolate and marshmallow evenings where the children will, you know, dress up and in their onesies and their pyjamas and come back to school at 7 p.m. It was the most unusual school.
So strange. To you.
Yeah, at Christmas, they had reindeers, a funfair. It's just, so for the children, it was like, huh? We're homeschooling, you know, and we're like, yeah, we're homeschooling. It's going to be great. So dad came up with an amazing idea, which was to allow the children to choose when they left. And he gave them that power, especially our second born. And he told us actually when the date we were going to begin, which I guess was a way of empowering them.
Yes.
Which helped them transition into homeschooling much more. Mm-hmm. And so we've been on the journey ever since.
Right. Fantastic. So what was it like? I mean, for you, I mean, I can see obviously, you know, you both at the conference, you've both felt passionate about it. What was it that was said to you that kind of caught your vision for both you or your husband, you know, that made you think, yeah, this is what we ought to do?
I think, wow, it was a lot that was, it was a whole day conference, by the way. It was a whole day conference, so there was so much to take in. But I think the first one would be the fact that we realized that we actually had the right and the power to educate our children. And I think it was the first time that had been put in front of us. Admittedly, I'd never actually looked into the law as to, you know, whose right it was, where the law lay, where actually, you know, when it came to education. And so even just hearing so many things I hadn't heard before, but something was already tugging at our hearts. And so we also believe that, you know, it's the Lord that gave us our children. They're a gift. Their education, their character, who they are, their purpose was very, very important. And that was highlighted so much. And we just felt it. We were convicted of it all. So we came back home and we had a lot of discussions, endless discussions. My husband was like, let's take a year out as the children are figuring out the date when this should happen. And let's educate ourselves. And that's what we did. We did a lot of reading for one year. And we came up with four pillars of our why.
Right.
And it was to enhance and tailor education so that it feeds the child. So that's what we came up with. It means more now when I look back, actually. To feed various aspects of the child, that's what we said. The second will be their skill, trying to find out whatever gifts and talents God had given them so that we nurture it or enhance it. And this was important to us. Number three, their character, their principles, and their worldview. Yeah, just instilling habits and helping them and giving them that space to nurture those habits. That was important. And also four, realizing that they have a purpose here, for them to realize their relevance here and to be available if and when they're called upon in any capacity by our Lord.
Beautiful, to live beyond just living for themselves.
Absolutely.
So wonderful, wonderful. It reminds me actually when I started homeschooling my son, we wrote an oath together, him and I, and we read it out. I think mostly because I was so afraid of myself that if I didn't write something, you know, when the days got tough, I might pull out, you know. But felt like we needed to write something that was similar along those lines of, you know, we're doing this not just to educate to get a job, but to educate, you know, for life, to educate for a purpose that's bigger than just ourselves, and to, you know, to be able to equip ourselves for the purpose that God has created us for, you know. So, no, beautifully said. Thank you so much for sharing that, Liz. Yeah. So once you kind of knew what you wanted to do and why, because I think the why is so important, how did you map out your philosophy, how you were going to educate your children? I know that you are a Charlotte Mason fan. But like, just so you know, almost every single person that I've talked to who's a Charlotte Mason fan often says, I'm not a purist. Yeah. I do Charlotte Mason in my own way. So it is given. So just know it is expected that you do Charlotte Mason your own way. Into consideration your own values and culture and so on and so forth. So that is what I mean by how do you do Charlotte Mason, or what other philosophies do you build in or weave into how you homeschool?
Wow. Oof. Okay. Then let me backtrack a little bit, because another value that was important, especially for my husband, and, you know, he's not on the podcast, but this was important to him. And so it still weaves into all the things I do here at home to best answer the question as to philosophy and style and Charlotte Mason is we predominantly have men in our home, right? We have boys, right. And the little girl came just 7 years ago. So he wanted to make sure that they were ready for the financial literacy side. I think that was important to him. He felt that there was a lot that he personally didn't learn as a young man, and had to learn through life experiences. So just readying them for that. And also he would say manhood. He would say them being prepared to be a husband and to be a father.
Beautiful.
Those were the things that were lacking in the system that we grew up in. You know, drawing on all those things that were valuable to us, Charlotte, I came across Charlotte Mason, and she started speaking my language. She was able to just to put words to the way I feel and the way I felt about a lot of things. And so, you know, firstly, the child being a whole person, that just resonated with me. Yes, it's made in the image and likeness of God. And just how the child should be exposed to nature, to art, to the good and the beautiful and the true kind of things, and and just let nature take its course and don't interfere too much. Guide, but don't interfere too much. And outside, she just said so many things. I was like, oh, good. Like, this validates some of my thoughts already, and this educates me on other things I didn't know. So that she plays a huge role that way in our philosophy, and so it's a bit eclectic mix, I'll say. Our whole approach, a bit of unschooling, a little bit of classical education, and then my own spice. Ultimately, it's my own spice. That's the way that's the best way to describe it, because I started off hunting for curriculum, and then I realized that actually I am the curriculum, the mother is the curriculum. My actual beliefs and my actual views, vision, all of and my goals, that is the curriculum. So now what happened was I now draw curriculums, parts of curriculums, resources that serve me instead of me being served by a curriculum.
Beautiful.
And for the whole part, I've also realized the freedom in books. you can educate the child on anything using an abundance of living books.
Yeah, that's one of the strong parts of Charlotte Mason's philosophy as well, isn't it? About using living books, that, you know, it gives you, the mother, freedom to facilitate, because you give the child the food and then, you know, have them narrate it back to you, right? So there's not much that you need to do there yourself. Beautiful. Liz, I'm really curious about your own spice. What does that sound like? What does it look like? Tell me a little bit more about your spice. You knew I was going to go there, right?
You know what it is? I think the way to explain my own spice is I know, I like most mothers, we all know our children, right? So I'm not under any kind of, like, how do I explain it? I'm not under a taskmaster's whip to do things in a set way. Because each child is so different and they're developing and they're growing and they have off days, they're not feeling it. I can sense where the house or the home is. I can sense. Mm-hmm. And so if we have to drop something and just throw something in, I just know this. Do you understand what I mean? There's this flow, there's this rhythm I have with them instead of just being so rigid. And it's right. Like, this is what I have to do today. We have to get through this today. And I'm very sensitive to where the children are at, because I know that if we do something and not feeling it, it's not going anywhere. But yes, also sometimes that they could be, you know, pulling a fast one. And I just have to stay with it and put those guardrails up and keep them straight so that they can be in discipline, self-control, and have a place to nurture their will. So it's that balance, always knowing when to put my foot down, not to put my foot down, when it comes to their education, when to throw in fun, and that kind of thing. So that's what I mean by my own spice.
So it sounds more like, you know, you cultivating that atmosphere for learning that Charlotte Mason talks about, right? That you're the one that kind of almost... For want, lack of a better word, it's like a ribbon that I see that flows right through the day. And that's you. You're the one that is creating that rhythmic flow.
Yes. Beautiful. It becomes more organic. So when I was using curriculums in the first 2 years, it wasn't organic. It was almost like I was replicating school at home. And it's that one serves best, because every household is different. So I love the fact that we're just all unique and different, and we can all... like interpret homeschooling within our own family culture and uniqueness. I think that's how it ought to be, by the way. So I think for some of us, we need that structure, we need that schedule. That's where we just thrive and we just, you know, we come alive. And for our home, I think I just found that for us and the different types of souls here, we just work best with the flow. And also sometimes, yes, the schedule is the schedule, because we need to implement character development, character building, and you need that, like that. So it's just always constantly measuring the temperature, because that's what she said. It is, it's an atmosphere, it's life, and it's a discipline. And so I have to discipline myself, feed myself, so that I can be in a better place to guide the children.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So coming to a main topic, which goes beautifully from what you just said about being the guide and creating that flow, is you've mentioned this already, is how you're using books, living books, and literature to guide your children's education. Perhaps what I'm hoping is maybe you can talk us through, like, on a typical day, how you use books, because I know you're a morning time fan. I've seen some of the beautiful lay spread that you make in the morning with candles on the table and a nice, you know, spread with kids with the books and stuff like that on your Instagram story feeds. But maybe, like, let's assume that you're painting this picture for someone who's never done home ed before. What would it look like? Was a typical day, how do books and poetry and reading come into play or flow throughout your day?
Okay, so for us, morning time starts with everyone waking up, and the kids are early birds. They tend to even wake up earlier than me. So either 5:30 or 6, they're up.
Wow. What time do they go to bed?
They go to bed between 8 and 9.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, they're just used to doing that because, dad's done different things with them, like waking up and doing their fitness regimes and different things going on. So they're used to doing that. But then when they do get up, they tend to do all their chores. One thing that we did was, and this is key, I don't know, but for me, this is one huge tip for parents, because this is what I'll tell all my children when they start having babies. They know it works well, is as soon as a child wakes up, let them make their bed and let them make it to, like, the best, using their best effort, make it look as best that they can. Since having children, that seems to set off the day. I don't know what it is about that, but it seems to set the day off. Taking pride in just doing your bed and leaving them just in order seems to set, like, some kind of order. I don't know. We've kept that up always. Yeah. And so they go downstairs, do their chores. Everyone's got chores that they do because it's important thinking about themselves and other people before themselves. Yeah. So, and doing everything in your best effort and to the best of your ability. And so that's what they do. From there, they do their personal devotions.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone finds their quiet place and they have their Bibles or, you know, they've got like, what's his name? Bear Grylls has got Soul Fuel, so many things.
Mm-hmm.
During the year, so they do that, and then we come together. And if it's just morning time, then because there's two kinds of morning time, there's morning time that some people call circle time, mm-hmm. and then other days we do poetry tea time, where we get all the fanciful things, and we do. The kids love to bake, so they'll bake some treats. We'll have some tea because I love tea, so do they. and then we'll have. So I've got a morning basket, but if it's just morning time, then I don't use the morning. If it's morning time, I don't use the basket. If it's poetry, tea time, then I use the basket. And then we just go through art study, poetry, music appreciation or composer study. Mm-hmm. We do Bible. We do hymnals, singing.
Yeah.
One of us will play their piano for us to sing a hymn along to. We will... what else would we do? That's the main core. Because sometimes we might throw in language depending on where we're at. Those are the main things we concentrate on. So but sometimes you can tailor the whole morning time, circle time, poetry tea time, morning basket, because they're different things, right? You can tailor it towards either a theme, you can tailor it towards like their personal passions,
right?
What can I even say? Maybe like there's a project that they want to do, and so
right.
we could just get all the books that support that project, and we can just go through them, have some maps out, and that kind of thing. So it's flexible, and also it doesn't also have to be in the morning. There's times where the afternoon is just a bit. You're just feeling like this is, I don't know, from morning to afternoon, it just feels a bit lull. You can just still pull out morning time and do it
with
the children at that time. I don't know what it is. It just brings us all together and it keeps us connected. There's so much bonding that's done over morning time. And we're able to get through actually the things that in our hearts are some of the most important things that you feel. I want to be able to do this. I wonder when I can do it. And you're like, okay, I can throw it in at this time, throw it in at that time when we're doing morning time. And you can get to it. So
beautiful. No, I call morning time the secret source of home education. Seriously, it really does bond a family together, and it helps you create like a common language, even that keeps you going throughout childhood for the kids. Because you're creating memories, right? Beautiful. We also do. I mean, certainly. Poetry tea time we tend to do in the afternoons, but morning time now, like you, we have in the mornings, but obviously haven't been out of sync for the last 9 months.
Cool. Morning congratulations time,
in the afternoon and in the evenings.
I remember those trenches, yes.
Which is all good. You know, we take it all with a pinch of salt, so beautifully said. So I noticed recently you had posted something about, you know, what your children were reading, and they all did like little reviews, seeing them, you know, do the reviews of books they were reading. But also I noticed that books are a big thing in your family. There was one post I read once about these are the books that, you know, we want to give as a legacy to our children when they leave home. They all ought to read these books. I think one of them was about healthy eating. I thought, oh, I love this. I love the idea that this is what we're giving you as you leave home, not just money, but books.
That's right. The wealth is in the books. That's right. Yeah, that's like, we've got a whole set of books that Dad said no one will leave this house without having gone through them. That's like there's so many things, but books is the thing. I mean, it just enriches their soul, and I feel it also lays a foundation in their heart and in their mind as children.
Yeah.
And even when they master reading, it's just nice to grab a picture book or a chapter, a short chapter book, and to be able to go through it with them. And we love family learning. Coming together, even with, you know, our eldest, we just love it. We like being together. And that's what schooling has done as well. It's just enhanced the bond within the family. So let alone when you add read alouds, you're like, you know, I don't know. There's just such warmth in there. And debates. I love the debates that just come from there. Some children become a bit silly, but it's all part of it.
It's all part of it.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a bit about those books and how you, how do you ceremonialize these books? Like, if I can use that, like, these are the books that you have, and that, you know, how do you come together to read them in family time? Yeah, talk us through that.
I mean, Aesop's fables are like our, so we've got particular things we like reading as a family. Then there are books that dad likes reading with the children at a particular age, from 14, 15 upwards. There was a set of books he reads with them, man to man, if that makes sense. And then there are books that they read individually, narrated back to us as they're going through, so we can hear their thoughts, not only recollecting what they've read, but also we want to hear their heart on the whole matter. So those are the so many layers that are going on. Ultimately, underneath all of that, we just realize the gift of offering them the love of reading, and that important, having that important skill. And to love like stories. When we're African, we're from West Africa. So oral stories are everything. So, So we want them
fables.
We want them to enjoy stories and not feel intimidated at whatever age, because we all enjoy a good story. That's why Hollywood is making so much money, right? So we want that to be embedded in them. And so these books give us that opportunity. I mean, the Read Aloud family, they've got a great book list in there. Sarah McKenzie's book.
Yes.
Out of the Read Aloud revival. Website has so much that you can glean from. This is an all-time favorite, Honey for a Child's Heart. That will always be from Gladys Hunt, a favorite of mine. I love everything inside there. Mere Motherhood, Cindy Rollins, is so great. I love her heart. Oh my gosh, I love her heart. And the way she writes about her journey and Read Alouds and Morning Time. Because when you talk about Morning Time, Leah, you tend to think of Cindy Rollins. But you know, there's a book for Poetry Tea Time, which you were saying you do in the afternoons. There's a book called A Year of Poetry Tea Time.
Oh, really? I've never heard of it.
Oh, yeah. It's a big book. It's a big yellow book, A Year of Poetry Tea Time, written by Christine Owens. It's an interesting book. I everything in one place. It teaches you how to discuss poetry and introduce poetry to children in one chapter. It has a whole year's worth of monthly poems, great poems, so that you're not going to look for it, if that makes sense. So it's very cost effective in that way. And then it has tea time recipes, sandwiches, you know, all these goodies, cakes, all in one place. Then it breaks down all the teas, the types of teas you can have, and you learn so much about green tea, black tea, breakfast tea, blossoming tea, Earl Grey, herbal tea, oolong. Oh my goodness! And it gives you history.
That's the real education right there, making poetry street tea time a complete art form.
And it's all in just one place. I think that's what I enjoy about this book. Then there's tea etiquette. So you learn all about afternoon tea, place setting, how you pour the tea, how you hold your cup, just fun stuff like that. Then it can even take you down rabbit trails for further study after reading some of the poems.
Yeah.
And then it even tells you where you can, you know, go and have adventures with themes connected to the poems. So I just thought it's quite unique. And, you know, an extra bit is the bios about all the poets, short bios about all the poets in the book. And I thought, okay.
So that's definitely one that's going in my Amazon basket.
I feel bad. I'm not sure if I should feel good about that.
No, fantastic.
Yeah, so that's a good one.
No, I've got a few books that you've listed here, which I think will be useful for Mama's Heart, who wants to encourage the love of reading. But I'm really still intrigued by these books that you and your husband have listed that will every child needs to read. And I mean, I'm probably asking for an impossible task, but I just want a few. Tell us a few. Aesop's Fables, one of them.
Chew and This would be another. Oh my gosh. All the Uncle Eric books.
Tell me about Uncle Eric. I've never heard of him.
Oh, like he's got so many books on how the world has been set up. So he'll talk about World War I, World War II, and he's got the truth spin on it, how the World Bank was set up, economics, just varying topics to sort of unplug you from the main narrative.
Right. on different topics.
That's right. Uncle Eric books, I think. Yeah. So these are books that we tend to say, if the house was burning, these were the books I would run and go and get. But there's so many, and they're downstairs in our library. Where's my husband? Okay. So money books. What's the other one? Because Dad's into all that. That's his part with homeschooling, by the way.
Right.
Okay. Their character training, character building, their faith,
right.
Walking alongside them as they walk alongside Christ is important to him. So there's theological books that he wants them to go through with him. And then there'll be Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a big one.
Oh, right. Robert Kiyosaki.
That's it. And he's even got the board game to go along with it when they're doing it. Yeah. Those are the ones that I remember off the top of my head. But like, sure. That's a whole nother podcast. I'd have to bring all the books with me.
Yeah.
Because they're all different books at different ages kind of thing. So, yeah.
No, that's a real good food for thought there. And I like the idea that you have books that that the children read individually and you discuss with them, and books that you read together as a family.
Oh, yeah.
And at which point in the day do you do your family read aloud?
So that's at least three times a week we want to get together. Other times it goes without saying for us, like we'll be reading our Bible. But if it's, you know, other books, then definitely three times. It's getting sparse as the children are working, the older ones, which, you know, I know it's a strange thing because your heart, I don't know, it just does something to your heart because I just love us being together.
Right.
And so because I know the richness that we can get from anything we read, you know, we tend to try and hold off until, you know, we're all together. If not, when it misses out, it breaks my heart. It's like, oh, they missed it, you know.
Yeah.
But so that's what we tend to do, even if it's just for a short time. And at the dining table, that's ministry for me. The dining table is my ministry. That's I just, because everyone's together. There's something about having food that connects us. And I think there's a saying that says it's not really about what's on the plate, but it's the, you know, the people on the seats. So true. We are together. Everyone is in good spirits. Everyone is enjoying the meal. Everyone is thankful. And we get to know each other more. We get to share Christ. We get to talk about our day. We get to read. We get to read poetry. So I would say definitely three times minimum is something we agree to. And then the dining table, be it lunch, be it breakfast, or be it dinner. But it's usually dinner. And a few at lunch is what I'll say. Especially if Dad is free and he's home, then yeah, definitely lunch.
Lunch, yeah. We're also big on sitting at the dinner table and talking and reading and sharing. It's funny, I think I had a similar conversation with Afia that when my son does visit probably other relatives, and they are very much sit at the table, eat, don't speak, especially if you're a child, he comes away, you know, confused, because if any time where we are allowed to speak and talk and debate and converse, it's when we're at the dining table eating. So almost eating and talking goes hand in hand, that he's always very confused when he's at those tables where he can't do that, because that's for us the time where you even, you know, reveal your heart, because you have each other's attention, you can eyeball each other. And I think it's also important for teaching children you know, when you're socializing, as you become, when you get older, it's usually at the dinner table. You take people out on dates. So you talk over a meal. So it's often quite confused, especially within African sort of cultures where there's Victorian mindsets are still kept, where children are seen but not heard.
Yes, absolutely. But
experience that with your children.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, okay, so with our children, they also know that every household is different. So for us, it's been a work in progress. So they know that they're home, they're free to be themselves, and they just have to respect and understand other people's spaces, I think. But that's been a work in progress, because obviously mm-hmm. you've got older ones, right? But the younger ones, like our little girl, yeah, that can be tricky, because she's always got a lot to say all the time. She's such a character. So I hear you. But we're not the typical African family, I have to say, though. We're not. So
yes. Well, we're all a fusion, really, aren't we? You're not typically British, but not typically African either. And
can you imagine? That's the gift, you know, like, I guess I can now see how it must have been for Paul, because he was Hebrew, he was Jewish, and he was also Roman.
Right.
And so there's a blessing that comes with that, because then you're multi-duplicitous, you know, like you can, wherever you are, you can be yourself in that capacity. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. You can slot in anywhere, but not belong anywhere either, which can also be lonely. So it's tricky. But at home with the Lord, at least.
That's right. Definitely at home with the Lord.
Liz, wow, what a rich family life, literary family life you have there. Just looking at, you know, the books and the way that's interwoven throughout your day. So in addition, outside of just the curricular-based sort of academic work that you do, you're doing morning time, you've got poetry tea time, you're doing your read-alouds. Within that, you know, is where you fit in your character development, your spiritual education, and poetry, you know, which captures every aspect of life. And I love that you know, that you've split between you and your husband the different things that you both do. I don't think I've heard that on the podcast yet, but it's so good to see, you know, your husband being really hands-on with you in home educating the children. It isn't just you and he's a breadwinner, but you're both doing it together. And I think as a Black family, Christian family, that in itself is a ministry, role modeling for others to see. Because as you know, the script that we see in the media often isn't like that, isn't Black families being together and, you know, fathers being around to raise their children. In my family, being a one-parent family, that isn't there. So when I see it, I believe in marriage. I think it's a great thing. And that's what I would want for myself, you know. But when I do see that, you modeling it, I think it's so heartwarming. And just want to say hats off to both of you for, you know, being on that journey together and also opening up your home for a lot of us to see. So I'm going to be cheeky and go off a little and just ask, you know, what for you do you think has been the key thing that has kept you both working together so beautifully in raising your five children?
Actually, before you answer that, let's take a short break with a short and chirpy little poem by the lovely Ellie Yeboah.
Spaghetti by Sel Silverstein. Spaghetti, spaghetti, all over the place. Up to my elbows, up to my face. Over the carpet and under the chairs. Into the hammock and wound down the stairs. Filling the bathtub and covering the desk. Making the sofa a man machine mess. The party is ruined. I'm terribly worried. The guests have all left. Unless they are buried, they're all buried. I told them, bring presents. I said, free confetti. I guess they had wrong because they all threw spaghetti.
I don't think we can take any credit for anything, to be honest with you. It's been Grace, his grace, and listening with his leadership, and just working our bit of land or patch that he's given us. When we started this whole journey, we started it together. Remember, he's the one that turned to me at the conference. We're homeschooling, right? So he did tell me that, you know, this thing that we're going to have to do together. We agreed. We just agreed. Yeah, we agreed. And he had said that these are the parts that he would play. And he wanted to be a part of the journey. That's why he's like committed to, if we go on any adventures or we go on an excursion, a field trip, he's committed to try and make it work that he's present. He wanted the kids just to know that he's a part of this. Or do you understand what I mean? But this was, we spoke about this prior to all of this. And so it was his commitment to the process. It's a personal thing for him.
Beautiful. Yeah. This is so encouraging to hear. And kudos to your husband. I hope he gets to hear this podcast and see how much, yeah, you appreciate him, but also that even onlookers from outside can see that that's a rare find in this day and age, especially him working time outside of the home as well. Lastly, and this is a question I tend to ask all my guests now, if there was one thing that you, or two things even, that you would say to a mom who is probably struggling with home edding, you know, five children at the moment, and it's in the trenches, but just finding it hard. What's that one thing you would say to keep them going? Or if there's a mom that is thinking of starting home education, but is on, you know, on the fence, what have you found that has always been your go-to when life gets tough, you know, that you can share with others?
Okay. Well, I think trying to find a moment that you can read something that can nourish your soul, or have that moment just to, because that for me, it will be in the morning when the kids are doing their chores and I can just have that time to get into my devotion and start off the day like that, makes a difference. The second is that for me personally, I think that motherhood is one of the most profound blessings that we have been given. And even on the tough days, even on the hard days, even on the confusing days, even on the days that it seems as if like you're just going up against like the current and you're not moving anywhere, you're actually doing more than you know. And the work that we do will live on. There's legacy attached to it, eternal. And you're bearing image bearers, children, and they need you. And you're the only mother that they need, and you're the only mother that they want. And time with our precious children is like precious. Like it's priceless. But even in the bad days, at least we're in the bad days with the most precious things, right? And so that's what I would say. No one knows your children better than yourselves. No one wants better for them than you would. And just know that, just take it easy, take it slow. Be with them, read, have fun, be silly. It doesn't always have to be serious. That's important. You have to tap into that childlike state that helps. And enjoy it. Enjoy the journey, because it goes pretty fast. I remember bringing our oldest home from the hospital, from special care baby unit, and now he's 23. And that's just happened just like that. So it's only for a season, and one day that home will be empty, and it will just be you and your partner, or maybe the grandkids. But nothing remains the same, and that's what I'll say.
Beautiful. Oh, wow. I had goosebumps as you said that. Probably my own mother heart needed to hear that than even the listeners. Absolutely profound. It's been such a joy speaking to you, and as I've just said, it's been enriching for me to hear someone who has had five children yet radiates so much joy about motherhood and the ministry of motherhood. And it's encouraging for me as I'm diving into the motherhood for the second
For the second time, Alberta, you go, girl.
I'm excited, but also thinking, oh, I'm a bit too old for this. But, you know, hey, I just...
She looks great. I was like, the vitality, no. The energy, I was just on video call with her. And I was like, no way. She looks great.
Wow. Oh, thank you. I pray it lasts.
I'm sure it will. By the way, you're going.
When I have the low days, I know who to call to give me
you
a
can call me.
Thank you so much for coming on the talk. Like I said to you at the beginning, I just have, my head is buzzing with permutations of where we can go next in our conversation about motherhood, about ministry to our children and so much else. You've been a real blessing. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. God bless you.
Yeah.
So, dear friends, we've come to the end of our series on rituals and practices in home education. There have been so many incredible takeaways from this series, but one cross-cutting theme that I'd like to echo at the end is just the phenomenal dedication of home educating parents, who some of whom have had amazing careers that they have given up in order to dedicate themselves to the raising of their children, the formation of their children's characters. And I know many of you at home listening to this are doing the same. So to those of you who are there in the trenches raising your little ones, and those of you who are listening committed also to the same journey, but perhaps managing that alongside a job, I would like to dedicate this last poem on motherhood by Christina Rossetti. Sonnets are full of love. Sonnets are full of love, and this my tome has many sonnets. So here now shall be one sonnet more, a love sonnet, from me to her whose heart is my heart's quiet love. To my first love, my mother, on whose knee I learnt love's lore that is not troublesome, whose service is my special dignity, and she my lodestar while I go and come. And so because you love me, and I love you, mother, I have woven a wreath of rhymes wherewith to crown your honoured name. In you not fourscore years can dim the flame of love, whose blessed glow transcends the laws of time, and change and mortal life and death. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. If so, we'd appreciate if you could take the time to subscribe, share, or write a review. This would help others who need to hear this show find us quickly. Also, if you would like to find out more about Homegrown Sunshine, please check out the links in the show notes. Until next time, keep nurturing your own sunshine.